Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves. You're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry the Bahamas and USA.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about damning defiance and malevolent mockery. I'm your host, Steve Taylor. And tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. I also wanted to take a moment to thank you for all of your donations. Every share, donation, and comment of support helps. Let's keep building this together. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Sam Morris and Micah Edwards are voice talents Jeff Sturtevant, Kevin Barberi, and Eric Peabody. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our Theater of the Minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Sam Morris and performed by Jeff Sturtevant. Ignoring his father's warnings, Clay stays out after dark, only to discover that some local legends are terrifyingly real, and the consequences of disbelief can be fatal. Now, without further ado, I present to you Tall Betsy.
Have fun. But be in before dark, or else Tall Betsy'll get you. The warning of Clay's father, along with a signature whiskey-scented laugh, reverberated through the boy's memory as he wandered back home, the broken egg sunset mocking him as it shrank and shrank into oblivion. He could feel the back of his neck start to electrify, and the collar of his shirt was damp with anxious sweat. Tall Betsy. Nothing but an old wives tale. Speaking of wives, where's yours, old man? Huh? She run off like the other one did? And my mom did, Clay thought to himself. The most genius comebacks are always conceived several hours after you need them most. After dinner, Clay had gone out with the other neighborhood boys over to the Nelsons' huge backyard for a pickup game of baseball. Clay had the reputation of being the best hitter in his class, and that night, he'd been on fire. Don't you think it's about time to wrap it up, Clay? You've already hit 5 homers on us. And, don't you want to get home quick? Terry Nelson, pitcher for the losing team, and hollered at Clay from the mound. Nah, just a couple more, Terry. 7's a holy number. Clay had yelled back, squatting into a hitter's stance that had already become notable to the high school baseball coach. That's fine, but we're all staying here tonight, and you gotta run all the way home before dark. Aren't you worried? Terry's voice seemed understandably annoyed, but also had a twinge of concern as well. About what? Clay had asked condescendingly. You know. Terry had looked around to the other boys, who all showed wide eyes, shaking heads, and all in all a silent message of, don't even bring it up. You know, tall Betsy, taking your head off? He had spat out weakly. Clay had laughed, making sure to use a little extra bass than normal. Don't worry about me. I don't believe that crap anyway. Throw the damn ball. He had definitely made up his mind. Okay, buddy, just know you'd be able to stay with me too, if your dad would ever let you. Clay resorted to a slight jog as he navigated through the streets from the Nelsons back to his house. His baseball bat bounced on his right shoulder to the point of pain, so he switched it over to his left shoulder. He crossed through the very few downtown streets that existed in his community, the old brick buildings looming over him. He glanced up at a couple of second-story windows that had been shattered, and they glared back at him like sore black eyes. The clock tower on top of the bank read 10:26. No way that's right, Clay whispered to himself as he jogged through downtown and over the railroad tracks that marked the beginning of the poorer side of town, where he lived. Soon the only light was the orange glow from the bulbs on the power poles, which really only helped Clay see tree limbs about 20 feet up that needed to be trimmed. The streets were dark and deserted. As he jogged by trailers and old shotgun houses, he could see residents closing front doors and throwing down window blinds, their shadows backlit by living room lamps. What is their deal? Clay thought to himself. He really didn't believe in old folk tales like Tall Betsy. Parents just want their kids home before dark, because they worry about terrible accidents and bad people, the real monsters of everyday life. Clay was old enough to understand that, and not just give in to superstition. He thought it was childish for his buddies to still believe in it. But as Clay came within about a mile from his house, where he was almost certain he would be feeling the wrath of his father's worn-out leather belt, something suddenly felt wrong. Clay stopped and took a breath, as he'd been jogging nonstop for over 2 miles at this point. He looked around. The residual orange glow from the light poles just barely lit the small, impoverished houses on this part of Oak Avenue. Even the slits between the blinds and the windows had gone dark. Clay swallowed a mouthful of spit. He could feel his heartbeat in his temples as he scanned around the street in front of him. Then suddenly, he had a reason to feel frightened. From way down the street, a maniacal, cackling laughter erupted up into the night. Clay froze. It had the timbre of a rusty, serrated blade. It continued on for several seconds before the ghostly echoes dissipated around him. Clay felt his jaw clench as he locked his attention down the street where the horrible noise came from. His eyes darted around any points of light, trying to find the source of the laughter. After a breathless moment, a new noise announced itself to Clay's ears. The ditches hugging both sides of the road were piled high with fall leaves, and a heavy, thunderous thumping mixed with telltale crunching began. A couple seconds passed between each heavy thump. Clay shot his eyes to both sides of the road, repeatedly. Which side was it coming from? The left? The right? Both? He couldn't tell. His legs were cemented, even though his calves were flexed to the point of pain. He passed his eyes between the tops of the two nearest poles, quickly itemizing everything he could dimly see. Branches, dead leaves, darkness, moss, no moss. Wait, moss? Clay stared at the small canopy of orange light under the pole on the right side of the road. Suddenly, he noticed the thumping had stopped. About 5 feet under the bulb hung two veils of pale moss, swaying ever so slightly in unison. Clay hadn't noticed it before. In fact, he couldn't recollect any moss he'd ever seen growing that high and hanging that low. He couldn't even see the bottom of it. It just swayed side to side. But then it started swaying back and forth. And Clay noticed something else. Emerging into the hazy light, from right between the top of where the moss hung, was the down-curved hook of a nose, easily as long as Clay's forearm. In an instant, he realized he wasn't looking at moss at all. He was seeing white hair falling dead from the summit of a head at least 15 feet off the ground. Suddenly, Clay felt his legs spring to life after being concrete for several minutes. He heard a high, prepubescent scream escape his mouth. He didn't dare look back under that light pole. His focus was dead ahead, into any shred of light that could help guide him home. As he sprinted past, that same cackling laughter pierced his hearing like a swarm of bats. It rang sharply behind him as he ran down the road, slowly growing faint as he covered ground. Clay's mind had been completely turned off. His muscle memory and a desperate reserve of energy were in charge of him now.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
He scurried the final mile home in about 5 minutes, which he would have noticed as being way faster than he'd ever run a mile, if he could even process a single thought not pertaining to survival. He slowed up as he approached his small dark house that sat at the end of a poorly underdeveloped street. In fact, their closest neighbors had lived several houses down, the units in between abandoned and boarded up. Clay caught his breath in the shadows, the nearest orange light pole hundreds of feet behind him. He quickly looked back down the road. He heard no thumping, saw nobody. His frightened instincts began to relax as he rested his hands on his knees. It didn't even occur to him that his baseball bat was gone, having been tossed as soon as he started running. He let out a long sigh, but then quickly inhaled as he realized his next horrifying showdown with his dad. He'd forgotten all about the fury of his father. Oh man, was he in for it now. He had escaped getting tortured by Tall Betsy, only to get murdered by the back of his dad's hand. Clay thought for a moment. Lately, there had been several nights where he'd been able to sneak in right at sunset. His father passed out on the front porch next to a brown bottle. If his dad was indeed asleep, perhaps Clay could sneak in and convince him he had arrived home before sunset. And in a hungover stupor, maybe his dad would believe him. It was worth a try. Crouching low, Clay began to sneak close to his house, his senses ultra-heightened, listening for his dad and looking for any slight movement in the shadows. He crept around the left side of the house, avoiding the front porch, where his father routinely sat and watched. He couldn't make out any chairs or tables, or his father's outline in the deep dark. But he could, however, hear a very slow rocking sound. It was his dad. He was sitting in his favorite chair on the front porch, and the slowness of the rocking made it apparent he was indeed knocked out. Clay felt a surge of relief as he made his way around the back of the house, silently approaching and opening the back door, having lifted up the mat and grabbing the key. Even in the profound darkness of the house, Clay had memorized where every creak and groan in the floorboards were, so he was able to navigate the hallway into the living room. Good news was, a candle from the kitchen scattered a very dim yellow glow, helping Clay further navigate his way through the house to his bedroom. The bad news was, he had to pass right by the front door, and therefore be well within earshot of his dad on the porch. Clay prayed to God that he wouldn't wake him up. With the grace of a ballerina, Clay worked his way through the living room, and ever so slowly moved past the screened-in front door. With the minuscule candlelight, he was actually able to make out shapes from the porch, so he paused as the slow creak from the rocking chair once again came to him. He could see the shape of a bottle on the table, next to a shadowed mass that leaned slightly back and forth and could only be his father. Except something else was strange. He could tell the chair was occupied, given the thickness of the outline. But the shadow stopped after the back of the chair. He could even make out the shoulders of a man, but after that, nothing. Nothing at all. No. No way. It had to be the dark playing tricks on him. Had to be. Had to be. This was Clay's unhinged belief in the moment he had snuck by the front door and analyzed the shadows on the porch. It's amazing what you'll believe in the most frightening moments of your life. It's also amazing how quickly beliefs can be shattered in similar moments. In this case, Clay's belief that the dark had played tricks on him was quickly annihilated when, from behind him, he heard a dense, cumbersome thump. It seemed to come from the hallway that led to the living room. Clay had left the back door open. After a couple seconds, another thump, then another, then silence. Although his lips were closed, Clay's jaws were open wide, trembling with realization. He felt himself slowly turning around toward the sound, shuddering almost to the point of collapse. He got a look at the living room. The dwindling candlelight was more than enough visibility for Clay. There, right in the room with him, was an enormous, old, old woman. She was drastically oversized for his house, her back bent forward as she crouched at the ceiling to even fit. Long, wispy flows of white hair hung to the floor. Disproportional to her seemingly thick torso, two skeletal arms branched down to her bent knees, with strange, outstretched fingers twisting back up toward her head. Her face was shadowed. Clay was paralyzed. body and mind.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I hope you enjoyed Tall Betsy, as written by Sam Morris, performed by Jeff Sturtevant, and produced by Drew Blood. Our second tale of the evening is written by Micah Edwards and is performed by Kevin Barberi, Jeff Sturtevant, and Eric Peabody. When young Oren befriends local bullies, they mock his belief in a magical Halloween tree, but the prank they pull has deadly consequences, leaving behind a horrifying reminder of what truly grows in Danspit. Now, without further ado, I present to you The Halloween Tree.
Oren Miller was 8 years old when his family moved to the small coastal town of Danspit. The town was no bigger than the name implied, which meant that the social groups were firmly fixed in patterns they had been following for generations. This worked out well enough for Josh and Isabella Miller, Oren's parents. They were friendly enough, but not particularly social. They liked their own little family unit. They didn't see any need to go out making friends, having people over, and generally inviting chaos into their lives. They had moved to Danspit because it was quiet, calm, inexpensive, and far from anyone they knew. Oren, on the other hand, was as friendly and gregarious as the day was long. He would talk to people in the grocery store who he thought looked lonely. He held his hands out for wild animals, hoping to entice them to come over to be pet. He entered Danspit's sole school with wide eyes, a happy smile, and an absolutely puppyish eagerness to be liked. He was a perfect target for bullies. With all 12 grades in one school, there was a long-established, rigidly enforced pecking order. Oren, as he soon found out, was firmly at the bottom. There were some brief early tests to see if he might move up a few rungs, but he failed them all. He did not taunt the clearly unpopular kids when the opportunity was given. He did not attempt to curry favor with the cool ones. He spoke to those in the older grades as if they might consider him worthy of notice, and he actually acted happy to see the teacher. By the end of the first week, Oren had ended up in a peer group with the other rejects. Even they tended to view him as a sort of sacrificial lamb, though, a hopeful little creature too naive to run away when the wolves began to close in. At lunch, at recess, or just in the halls, Oren would suddenly find himself abandoned in mid-conversation, surrounded by cruelly smiling fifth and sixth graders twice his size. His parents tended his scraped knees and bloody noses and counseled Oren to keep to himself. Books and tablets could be trusted, they told him. People were far too mercurial. The fact that Oren was the sort of eight-year-old who knew what mercurial meant was part of his problem, of course. Another part was his unflagging optimism. Oren did not miss the embedded attitudes of the town, the established families and unspoken rules and hidden societal hierarchy. He simply felt that a winning smile and a positive attitude could change the rules, or at least carve out an exception. He did not think of it in such clear terms, of course. If he had, perhaps he would have seen the unlikelihood of success in such a plan. It was simply his approach to life in general. He always believed that things would work out for the best, even when that had repeatedly proven unwise. He always approached situations with hope. This is why Oren was unsuspecting when Scotty Lawson, a seventh grader who lived in his neighborhood, approached him under the guise of friendship. Oren was riding his bike one afternoon when Scotty pulled up alongside him.
Hey, you're the new kid, right? Don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you.
Okay, said Oren, who hadn't considered that that was even a possibility.
My brother Kyle is in your class.
Oh, said Oren. Kyle was one of his most frequent bullies. He wasn't sure how to work this information into the conversation. Yeah, I know him.
You can say he's a jerk. I know he is sometimes.
He's okay, said Orin, unwilling to tear down even Kyle to his own brother.
Yeah, well, I heard him bragging about picking on you. I smacked him pretty good for it, but I was thinking that maybe the lesson would stick a little better if you whacked him one yourself. Want to come over and give him a thumping? I'll even hold him down for the first hit. From what he was saying, sounds like he deserves that much.
This was, of course, not Scotty's plan at all. While Kyle had in fact told him about the torment he had visited on Orin, Scotty had received these stories with glee and encouraged his brother to greater heights. His intention this day was to lure Orin back to their house under the guise of getting back at Kyle, only for Kyle to ambush him and beat him more thoroughly than he could at school.
I don't really think I should do that, said Orin, who had never hit anyone in his life.
I'm telling you, it's okay, said Scotty.
Orin wanted Scotty to like him. He felt bad that the boy had sought him out to extend this admittedly violent olive branch, only to have it rejected. He cast around for something he could offer instead, to show that he was not simply refusing Scotty's friendship. My parents don't really like me going to other people's houses, he said, which was probably true. He had not yet been invited to anyone's house in Dansbit, but as his parents were sort of generally against socialization overall, it seemed like a safe bet. You can come over to my place, though, if you want.
Kyle's not there, said Scotty. How would that work?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't get to hit him like you suggested, but we could do something else.
I don't think so,
said Scotty, who was already growing bored of this. It hadn't occurred to him that the little twerp wouldn't jump at the opportunity to get in a few licks of his own. There was a decent downhill just up ahead. If he let Orin build up a bit of speed and then shoved him off the bike, that would teach the kid for wasting his time. It wouldn't be as good as getting tricked into going to his bully's home just to get beaten up, but it would still be pretty funny.
We can see if the Halloween tree is growing any candy yet, said Orin.
The what?
The Halloween tree. It's a little early, but October's almost here. It might have something on the branches already. Do you not have any around here?
Any trees that grow candy? Nah, we're a little low on those.
My parents brought a clipping from our old one. We planted it in the backyard right after we got here. Good thing if you didn't have any.
Yeah, said Scotty.
He was no longer thinking about pushing Orin off of his bike. This had the potential to be way more entertaining.
We usually just end up buying our candy like idiots. Let me see this tree.
The tree was nothing remarkable, though it was far more than the clipping Orin had claimed. It stood barely taller than Scotty's head, and its trunk might have been as thick as his wrist at its widest part. It had clearly been planted with care. Fresh dark mulch surrounded the tree, warding off weeds, with several dozen decorative granite chunks making a small decorative ring around the base. The tree's branches reached out in all directions, covered in a blaze of red and orange leaves. Orin rustled eagerly through the lower limbs, searching for the candy he swore would soon be there.
See? Look at these nubs here at the end. These are the blossoms. When it grows, it'll come from there. See how they're on every branch? You're taller than I am. Look up toward the top. Maybe the ones with more sun will have some growing.
Nothing here,
said Scotty, barely holding back his laughter. It was amazing, but the kid actually believed that this tree was going to grow candy.
You sure this is the right tree?
Definitely. We're just too early. Come back in 2 weeks, maybe. You'll see.
He ducked back out from under the branches and turned to Scotty, his face shining.
This is my favorite time of year. Sometimes I get so excited I wake up in the middle of the night just to see if the Halloween tree is putting out candy yet. I can see it from my room when the moon is bright. I always sneak out and steal some before I'm supposed to.
Wow,
said Scotty, who suddenly had a plan much funnier than the one he'd set out with that day.
Could grow any day now, huh?
Yeah, I bet it'll sprout on the full moon.
Sure, that makes sense,
said Scotty.
For a Halloween tree, I mean.
Right? You can come back over then and see.
Oh, I definitely will.
Kyle was briefly disgruntled when Scotty returned home without Orin in tow, but his disappointment evaporated into malicious amusement as Scotty regaled him with the story of Orin's impossibly credulous belief.
Actual candy? Growing off of a tree?
Kyle scoffed.
That's what he said.
Both brothers broke up laughing. As they composed themselves, Scotty cautioned his brother.
Not a word about this. You gotta act like I never told you anything about any Halloween tree. The joke's not gonna work.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if that dork thinks candy grows on trees, he's not gonna get suspicious no matter what I do.
Okay, maybe,
Scotty conceded.
But just the same, don't risk screwing this up. You don't say anything to anyone about this.
He gave his brother a shove that was just light enough that he could pretend it was playful. Kyle staggered back and tried to act like he'd meant to move away just then anyway.
I'm not gonna tell him,
Kyle said.
This is gonna be epic.
True to his word, over the next few days, Kyle said nothing about the Halloween tree to anyone at school. Every night when the moon rose, he would look at his brother, who would shake his head.
Not full yet,
Scotty kept saying. Finally, 3 days later, Kyle got the head nod he'd been waiting for.
Tonight's the night. Let's go get him.
They snuck out of the house and pedaled down the streets under the shining gaze of the full moon. Once at the Miller's house, they crept into the backyard, bags of candy rustling quietly in their fists. The tree was brightly illuminated by the moonlight, just as Orin had said. It was taller and more full than Scotty remembered, though obviously it was still completely bare of candy. Its highest branches stretched well above where he could reach. Fortunately, they were thin and easy to bend down. The brothers took out rolls of tape and opened their bags of candy. Kyle set to work on the low branches while Scotty did the high ones. Within minutes, Oren's Halloween tree was in fact bedecked with candy. From a slight distance, most of the tape wasn't even obvious. Scotty and Kyle backed off to the shadows of the house, giggling and congratulating each other on their work. After a few minutes of silence, Kyle whispered,
"What if he doesn't come out?"
"He will,"
Scotty whispered in return.
"Here, let's make sure he's up."
He pulled a fun-sized candy bar from his bag and pitched it at the window overlooking the backyard. It bounced off of the screen with a loud thunk.
"Okay, now shh, and get ready to record."
A minute later, the back door of the house creaked open. Oren, dressed in a matching pajama set printed with cartoon characters, came running down the steps toward the tree.
"Halloween! Halloween!" he cried.
His voice was quiet, but the excitement was undeniable. He practically danced his way beneath the fiery branches with their candy treats.
"Halloween tree is blooming! Time for... huh?"
Kyle zoomed in on the confused look on Oren's face as he realized that all of the candy was taped in place.
"Halloween trees aren't real, idiot!"
Kyle jeered. Scotty laughed and began to pelt Oren with candy.
"Look, it's fall. Gotta watch out for that falling candy."
Kyle kept the phone's camera closed in on Oren to capture the mixed expression of fear, pain, and loss. He saw a particularly well-aimed chocolate bar strike Oren in the eye, causing him to stagger back and fall out of frame. There was a brief, wet crack, and Kyle panned the camera down, expecting to see Oren crying on the ground. Instead, Oren was lying very still amid the scattered candy. One of the decorative granite rocks was black in the moonlight, and the already dark mulch was growing darker in an expanding ring away from where the back of Oren's head met that stained rock.
"Is he okay?"
Kyle whispered.
"Shut it off,"
Scotty ordered. All of his humor had vanished in an instant.
"You shut that off right now."
He grabbed Kyle by the arm and yanked him toward their bikes. They sped home, Kyle straining to keep up with his brother. They were back inside their house before Scotty spoke again.
"Give me my phone,"
he said. Kyle handed it over and watched as his brother erased the video.
"This never happened. You say one word about this, ever, to anyone, and I will kill you."
Kyle pictured the dark mulch and darker stone. He saw Oren's unmoving body. He nodded and said nothing. There was surprisingly little outcry. Word got out that the new folks' boy had died, and no one was surprised to see the for sale sign go up in front of the house after that. But no one had really talked to them, and the boy hadn't had any real friends. And in the end, it seemed easiest to just act like the Millers had never come to Danspit at all. They weren't entirely gone, of course. They had a house to back up,
and folks still saw them coming and going occasionally. They'd already left in spirit, though. Neither Kyle nor Scotty spoke about that night again, not to each other or anyone else. Kyle cried at school when he saw Oren's empty desk. The emotion was spawned less by regret than by fear that the police would be coming to get him when they discovered it was his fault. He knew they would figure it out. He and Scotty had left too many clues when they ran. They would take him away. Kyle dared not ask Scotty if he worried about it too. He knew his brother's demand for silence had been no idle threat. October wore on, though, and the police never came. Slowly, Kyle started to believe he might not be caught. He found himself biking by the Miller's house every few days just to assure himself that there was no police activity, no investigation. The house remained quiet. The grass in the front yard slowly began to grow too long. The for sale sign started to look like triumph. On the night before Halloween, Kyle was biking by when he noticed something new, a red halo overtopping the house. The bloody tint stained the underside of the pale yellow leaves on the tall oaks behind the house as the setting sun reflected off of something red below them. Curious, Kyle stopped his bike and walked cautiously through the overgrown grass toward the backyard. His heart thumped in his chest, but he told himself not to be a coward. Nothing had happened here, he told himself. As far as anyone knew, he had never been in this backyard before. The Halloween tree took his breath away. It stood 15 feet tall with a trunk as thick as around his waist and branches sturdy enough to climb. Its limbs were bursting with leaves in riotous burning orange and a crimson furious red. The light glinted off of 1,000 tiny points of reflection peeking through the leaves, scattering a red and orange glow across the yard. At first, Kyle thought that the tree had been hung with lights. When he realized the truth, his mouth dropped open and his heart stuttered a step. The tree was covered in candy, actual plastic-wrapped candy. Everything from candy bars to chocolate kisses to little hard suckers. They clustered on the tree like nuts. The branches hung low with the weight. Kyle reached out and tugged on one. After slight resistance, it came free in his hand. He could see where the wrapper had melded with the bark. The wrapper itself felt like plastic foil. It bore no writing, but inside was a small, soft cube of chocolate. Kyle tore it open carefully. Inside was nougat. He pedaled home as fast as he could and burst into his brother's room.
Scotty!
He panted, catching his breath.
Scotty, you gotta come see this.
See what?
Don't hit me. You gotta see it.
See what?
The for sale house.
Kyle flinched back toward the door as Scotty stood up from the bed, his expression darkening.
It's the Halloween tree. I'm telling you, you gotta come look.
Scotty hesitated, suspicion drawing foul lines across his face.
If this is a prank, I'm going to beat you within an inch of your life.
I swear it isn't. You wouldn't believe me if I told you. Come see.
Dusk was creeping over the yards by the time the two arrived. Kyle led the way into the backyard. The Halloween tree glowed a sullen, charnel red in the dying light.
Jeez, that thing got big,
said Scotty.
Go look at it closer,
Kyle urged.
You'll see.
Scotty reluctantly walked closer.
So what? It's still got the candy we... No, wait. This is way more than... And it's... Is this stuff attached?
He tugged on a cluster of a dozen candies. The whole clump came free in his hand, the wrappers still attached to each other by wooden stems.
It's growing candy,
said Kyle. His voice was low, as if saying it quietly meant he didn't have to believe it.
It actually is. He was right.
No way. This is a trick.
Scotty looked up into the tree.
It's probably just down here on the low branches. Someone glued it on or something.
It doesn't look glued.
Look, I'll show you.
He grabbed a low branch and hauled himself up.
I'm going up higher where they couldn't reach. There won't be any up there. You'll see.
Scotty climbed higher and higher as he spoke, candy greeting him every inch of the way. Determined to be right, he pressed on. Down on the ground, Kyle tentatively unwrapped a piece of chocolate and put it into his mouth. It tasted exactly like any other candy bar. He chewed carefully, then swallowed. He could not tell it apart from anything from the store. Suddenly, Scotty shouted, a brief exclamation of surprise and fear.
Scotty?
Kyle called.
I'm fine.
He laughed, a slightly high-pitched sound.
Just a Halloween decoration up here. Stupid half-sized skeleton stuck up here like some sort of screwed-up Christmas tree angel. Probably just part of the whole Halloween tree thing. They put it up here along with the candy.
So there is candy up there?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. It's all fake. It's probably plastic ornaments.
Kyle chewed and swallowed another piece of candy.
It's not ornaments. It's definitely real.
The branches up above rustled furiously. Kyle peered up, but could see nothing but leaves.
Scotty?
There was a loud, wet crack that could have been a branch breaking. Kyle leapt back to avoid being hit by the falling limb, but what came tumbling out of the tree instead was the limp body of his brother. His arms and legs flopped bonelessly as he bounced off of the branches. Dark red droplets spun from his head in a terrifyingly thick spray. He hit the ground face first and did not move.
Scotty!
Kyle rushed to his brother's side. The back of his head was caved in. The inside looked dark and terrifyingly wet. Kyle hesitated, unsure what he should do, when with a whistling thump, something else crashed through the branches to slam into the ground. It was one of the ornamental rocks from the border of the tree. Kyle knew without looking which one it was. It dripped with a dark liquid that matched the inside of his brother's skull. The stain spread out, once again darkening the mulch. Kyle stood frozen, watching that darkness reach slowly out across the ground. He knew he should run. His brother had been dead before he'd hit the first branch falling out of the tree. He could still save himself if he could just convince his legs to move. And yet he stood there, staring at the body and the murderous rock, until the branches began to rustle again, more gently this time. Something soft started to fall from the tree, something that sounded like rain, but wriggled across his skin when it landed. They were worms, tiny little inchworms as black as night or as bright as Hunter's orange. They dripped from the tree in an endless cascade. Not quite from the tree, Kyle realized. From the candies. Every candy on the Halloween tree was bursting open, and the worms were boiling out from within. His stomach wrenched. Kyle threw up violently, barely managing to turn away from his brother's corpse before he spewed out everything he had eaten. He could see the worms wriggling in the pool, and it made him retch again. The action did at least start him into motion. Kyle fled across the lawn, gasping and choking, his stomach turning in knots. He imagined he could feel the worms inside. They clawed and bit at him as he rode pell-mell for home. He crashed his bicycle a dozen times and threw up at least a dozen more. Every time, the worms. He felt them on his tongue. He saw them peeking out of the bleeding scrapes of the road rash. They were in him now. They were never going to leave. Inside the Miller house, Isabella and Josh sat quietly, holding each other's hands and listening to the awful noises outside. They heard the scramble up the tree and the fall back down. They heard the screams and the fleeing bicycle. They sat for a very long time and listened to a terrible chewing sound, a sound of grizzle and jerky and bone. After far too long, it was quiet. Still, they waited, until finally there was a timid knock at the door. Isabella opened it to reveal Oren's small frame, hunched and pale, shivering in the night air. She gathered him inside and hugged him close, brushing leaves and dirt from his skin. Very carefully, so as not to hurt him, she plucked the stem from the top of his head and handed it to her husband, who silently put it into a small cup of soil and set it on the windowsill before joining his wife and child in the hug. The house would sell soon. They would leave this town behind and find another like it,
one quiet and calm and far from anyone who knew them. Orin would be 8 again, and perhaps things would go better this time. On the sill behind them, caught in a ray of moonlight, the tiny plant opened one small red leaf.
I hope you enjoyed The Halloween Tree, as written by Micah Edwards, performed by Kevin Barbieri, Jeff Sturtevant, along with Eric Peabody. On to the shows. Otis Gyre and Kevin Barbieri have their very own show here on the network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out The Fear from the Heartland Archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Also, don't forget, we have our very own book out right now. Since 2012, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights has been keeping people awake through the night with terrifying audio renditions of tales from the darkest minds modern memory has to offer. Now, in this first of 3 volumes, collected are 30 tales never before available by some of the most prolific and talented authors of the online community, each one accompanied by a suitably grim illustration by David Romero. Strange cats, body mutilations, demonic apartments, revenge from beyond the grave, and yes, even a man-eating monster or two. All of these and more beckon you further into the darkness. Turn off the lights and turn on the dark indeed. Who needs sleep anyway? Check it out today by visiting www.chillingbook.com. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight, and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, X, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.